Okay, so reading from the Jiva Dharma. And, okay, we're at Nitya Dharma Race and Cast. Om Gyana Timurandasya Yananjana Shalakaya Taksura Mulitam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha. I'm just looking at this now. So we're in the section, as you remember, that Lahari, his son, Devadatta, came to see if he could convince him back home. Lahari now has joined the ashram in Gautam Dweep of Premdas Babaji. And Devadatta, or Vidyaratna, he sees that some Muslim descendants, actually the Chankazi, and they have become Vaishnavas, because Gauranga Mahaprabhu explained to the Chankazi the deep meaning of the Quran is actually, it's actually, Islam means to surrender to God. So he shows them some respect, and they have a discussion. And because Vidyaratna is a smart Brahmin, it means they very much follow the ritualistic parts of the Vedic literature. And there's different things about social impropriety. Then he becomes really upset. And he thinks this is such a impropriety for Hinduism or Brahmanism, and he brings the most learned Smarta Brahmins means ritualistic Brahmins from Navadvip to challenge the Vaishnavas. And of course, one quality of a Vaishnav, he's not really so much interested in debate. Interested in the sense that debate is usually on a question of false ego. There's something so strong in us. I just see it so powerfully that people just don't like to be wrong. It's just such an affront on their foundational illusory principle that I'm in the center and I'm the enjoyer. When you have that conception, there's accoutrements of power. You're very much attached to accoutrements of power. If you have a false egoistic conception, because you want to enjoy the world and power allows you. And one of the main powers that allows you to enjoy the world is intellectual superiority. Not even being intellectual, but just having authority. And people just don't like, but Vaishnava is not concerned with that. So that impetus to defend the false ego is not within his consciousness, because he doesn't value the false ego. He doesn't value reputation in this world other than representing God. And such a person really doesn't care if he's praised He's detached from glorification. And therefore, he doesn't have impetus to defeat people. And therefore, he's reluctant to debate, other than if it's what other people say are either offensive to one's conceptions, or they are challenging to the faith of those that don't have such strong faith, and one feels necessity to defend one's convictions. That's why it says an acharya sits on the vyasa san, if he sits on the spiritual seat, he has to, he has to do that in opposition to other conceptions. Everything is based on faith. So and sometimes arguments are subtle. They appear right, even though they're against your conclusions, even they're against the true conclusions. So in that sense, reluctantly, a Vaishnav has to defend his tradition. So Prem Das Babaji is not interested, but they ask Vaishnav Das, his disciple. And now in the discussion, it's a very detailed discussion, can make a very interesting point that the Shastras prescribe ultimately that one's vana, occupation, is determined by his qualities, chaturvanyam, mayashrishtam, guna karma, svabhagasa. That it's determined by one's qualities, guna and karma, by your qualities and the work you've done. It doesn't say janga. Although janma or your birth has a tremendous effect on the qualities you have, and even karmically it does. Even karmically, it has such an effect because according to one's past deeds and aspirations karmically, then you're linked up with a certain family. It's not an absolute principle. It's a very powerful principle. It's even mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, Suchinam Srimatam Gehe Yoga Brasya Gajayate. That one who is a fallen yogi, he takes birth in an aristocratic family or a learned family, because he has spiritual aspiration not complete. He gets born in an opportunity to fulfill the previous aspiration. So your previous aspiration has a lot to do with the situation that you're born in, which will be the primary situation to influence your qualities. But the qualities are also there. So birth is a very powerful factor in the qualification for the work that one does. But ultimately, it's the qualities that one pursue. So one's not an outcast just by birth, although it does say something when one is born in a family of outcasts. But it's not the absolute determining factor. So now Vaishnav Das is explaining this. He says, The Shastras prescribe that one's varna should be determined according to these different natures. The determination of varna on the basis of birth alone is a recent practice. An individual's inclination for a specific type of work and his expertise in it are both related to these natures. And we see that even in the Hare Krishna movement, there is some exceptionally saintly and brahminical people who have not been born into those families. Although we also see that the effect of being born into a family of Brahmins who are sattvic and religious also has an effect. We also see also people born in Brahmin families who just become businessmen or even rogues. A person's nature gives rise to his inclination and taste for particular activities, and it is this particular nature, swabhav, that is known as the nature according to specific types of work, tat-tat karma, yogya, swabhav. In some cases, birth is the prominent factor in ascertaining a person's nature, and in other cases, association is the primary factor. Nature is formed by association, which begins from birth, so birth is certainly one cause that determines the development of one's nature. So you're born into a particular family for particular reasons, karmically, and the association begins at birth. So it's a very powerful effect. It's just not the singular determining factor. Indeed, nature develops from the moment of birth, but that does not mean that birth is the only cause of nature and eligibility for a particular type of work. It's a great mistake to think like this. There are many other causes for developing qualities and work. Therefore, the Shastra prescribed that one must study a person's nature when one assesses eligibility for work. And this is very interesting, a person's nature. I know when I was in Vrindavan, I was always concerned how this can be done. And I remember I asked one sadhu, and he said, oh, a Brahmin has all first-class qualities. A Brahmin means completely detached. And therefore, a Brahmin can live just depending on God. Because he has that type of faith. And a Kshatriya, by his nature, for security, he needs to control some things. He needs some land. And a Kshatriya, and a Vaishya, he needs to wheel and deal. He needs to do business. There's kind of less faith on that platform. And the Shudra, he's not secure without a master. So you have to study a person's nature. It And even Prabhupada said, you know, America, something, he was complicating America. He said, in America, there were a few Vaishyas. It's hardly real Kshatriyas, real Brahmins. Sudamani, what is meant by Tattika Shraddha, faith in the absolute truth? Vaishnavdas. Tattika Shraddha is pure-hearted faith in Bhagavan, which gives rise to a spontaneous attempt to attain him. So this is the most important Shraddha. Is faith in God. There's different types of Shraddha, different types. So, and Atattvika Shraddha, unreal faith, is that which is based on an erroneous conception of Bhagavad, which arises in the impure heart of seeing worldly activities, and which gives rise to self-interested endeavors rooted in pride, prestige, and worldly desires. The most important factor in satisfaction and happiness in life is what faith you have. Because if you have the wrong faith, if you have the wrong faith, one can never be happy. Your happiness is dependent on your faith. What you trust, what your faith, this is word here is Shraddha. Shraddha is not an intellectual conception. It's more a conception based on It's more a conception based on the experience that you have. Like, so it's like, what is real faith in bhakti? Real faith in bhakti is your experience of bhakti. Your experience is serving God is good. And that gives you trust that gives you a certain type of trust. So that's Shraddha. And some people have trust and pride and prestige, even if they believe in God, even if they believe in Krishna, even if they believe that devotional service is the aim of life intellectually, but they still are endeavoring for prestige and worldly desires. And therefore, that compromises their faith. They don't really have full faith in Shastra, which says that the highest happiness is pure devotional service. Some Mahajans have described Tattvika Shraddha as faith in the Shastra. It is this Tattvika Shraddha that is the cause of eligibility for bhakti. It's faith in the Shastra because you've heard the Shastra and you've applied it and you've realized it. And because you have that experience of the fruit of following Shastra, then you tend to trust it, even beyond your intellect. It's just like you go to a doctor and you have good results and you trust them beyond what you can see and perceive, but it's still based on certain core application of knowledge that gives experience. So Tantric faith in truth is faith in the Shastra, because that's the source of the experience that you have that gives you an experience of bhakti, or an experience of detachment, or an experience of any activity that's prescribed there. Sri Damani, let us admit that some people have developed faith in Shastra, although their natures are not elevated. Are such people eligible for bhakti? Vaishnava, Shraddha is the only cause of eligibility for bhakti. So their nature is not be elevated. We see that. They may not be refined through the modes. They may not have jnana sukriti, a tremendous analytical ability and detachment. They may not have karma sukriti. They may not be high birth or aristocratic. But they still have faith in Shastra. And there's some people that have jnana sukriti, and they don't have faith in Shastra. They have faith in Shastra because they have an experience. And this Shraddha is the only cause for eligibility for bhakti. In other words, real bhakti means that you're doing it to please Krishna. I mean, you can go before the deities and put a bag of rice and say, oh, Krishna, you know, solve my problems, get my daughter married, get my son into a prestigious college. So there's all kinds of sukriti that one can get. But when one has sufficient sukriti, sufficient deeds of devotion, then one will come to pure devotional service. Will come to bhakti for the pleasure of Krishna. Nature is the cause of eligibility for karma, but for not bhakti. So if you want karma, for eligibility to do some work or do some sacrifice, or to be eligible for some activity according to caste, then nature may be the eligibility. But for bhakti, it's only that faith. This is clearly stated in the following slokas from Srimad Bhagavatam 11:27-28. Jatu Shraddho Matkatasu Nirvana Sarva Karma Su. A sadhaka who has developed faith in narrations about me and who is disgusted with all kinds of fruitive activity may still be unable to give up material enjoyment and the desire for such enjoyment. He should understand in his heart that so-called pleasures are actually sources of misery, and condemning himself while attempting to enjoy, thereafter in due course of time, he may be able to worship me with love, faith, and determination. So very interesting verse. He has faith in me, and he's kind of understands and it's experienced through activity, he still has some scars. And he can't go for material enjoyment. But that person who understands in his heart that the pleasures are the source of misery because they attach one to the false ego, the bodily concept of life. So actually, pleasure is the cause of misery. if you see that pleasure as your goal. When I mean pleasure, I mean not a state of consciousness, but a state of ego or sense pleasure. If you view that as happiness, then you become attached to the conception of enjoyer, which means the false ego, and you suffer so much because a pinch of suffering is felt more than a ton of happiness. So even if you get so much pleasure, the miseries that come with the body, which one is now more absorbed in, are felt so much more acutely. So someone who just leads a life of indulgence, they suffer more. Because they not only they're feeling the pleasures, but it's putting in the bodily conception, they feel the pain more. But he's saying, but if someone has this faith in Krishna, and therefore understands, even though he's attached, that these things are disgusting, then when the person has that type of humility, then in due course of time, he becomes purified. Because the dissatisfaction, and Rasanath made this point Sunday, it was very good. Dissatisfaction between where you're at and the goal you should attain is the force that enables you to actually bridge that gap. But if you actually are at a particular platform that's not the ideal, but are satisfied at that, then you can never achieve the ideal. So here he's saying, if someone knows the ideal, which is pure devotional service, which is represented by faith and hearing about God, and is dissatisfied where he's at, even though he has an impetus to enjoy it, that dissatisfaction, which is a symptom of one's humility, will enable one to experience the mercy of the Lord in a way that one will eventually be able to close that gap. So what Vaishnav is saying, Das is saying, this bhakti, this faith that serving Krishna is the highest, which means the trust that not serving Krishna is not the highest. That type of faith will give one eligibility for bhakti, eligibility for perfection, even if one is still attached and committed to sense gratification. Such a powerful point. And the same thing said in Bhakti Lok, that the difference basically between a devotee and a karmi is the devotee thinks his attachments are insignificant, and a non-devotee thinks his attachments are the goal of life. And he gives another verse from 11:29:30. Proktena bhakti yogena bhajato mam sakrinne. When the sadhaka constantly worships me by the method of bhakti yoga that I've described, I come and sit in his heart. As soon as I am established there, all material desires and samskaras, the impressions on which material desires are based, are destroyed. So he's saying you can be born in any family. But if you have that faith to worship God, Krishna will sit in your heart, and soon all those desires will be gone. When the sadhaka directly sees me as Paramahatma situated in the hearts of all living entities, the knot of false ego in his heart is pierced, all of his doubts are cut to pieces, and his desires for fruitive activities are completely nullified. Kridayananda Maharaj once gave an example how in bhakti you judge things not by where one's at, but where one will be. And he gave the example of someone jumping off a building. Initially, he may jump, and he may be going up, but even if he's going up, people see by the force of gravity he'll go down. So no one will say he's going up, they'll say he's falling. Even if temporarily he jumps up off the building, they'll say he's falling. So in the same way, when one has the force of bhakti, even though he may be situated in a particular way, the shastras will see the result. Another verse from 11:20:22:30. Yat karma vi yat tapasa dhyana vairagya yaschayat. Though the power through the power of bhakti yoga, my bhakti is easily obtained, whatever results are obtained with great difficulty through fruitive activity, austerity, knowledge, renunciation, practice of yoga, charity, religious duties, and all other auspicious types of sadhana. My bhaktas are free from all ambition, but they can easily be promoted to the celestial plan, attain liberation or resonance if they all desired. So again, the power of bhakti yoga. Obtain results because it's which are not available in other paths, because the path of bhakti is the path of grace. Your worship of God and your desire to achieve perfection is not dependent on your own effort. Because bhakti means relationship. And therefore, you get the object of your worship reciprocates and enables you to achieve beyond your effort. Tesham satati yuktanam bhajatam prithipurvakam dadami buddhi yogam tvam. One who worships me with faith and devotion, I give them the knowledge by which they can come back. So he's explaining this all to Chudamani, just to explain to him that the highest sukriti is bhakti sukriti, not karma sukriti or not jnana sukriti. The highest is bhakti sukriti. And one, in any situation, just by the platform of their faith, regardless of their karma sukriti, is eligible for the highest spiritual attainment. This is the systematic development of bhakti yoga that arises from shraddha, from your faith, from your trust of shastra and following shastra. And that's why it is so important to hear shastra. Because without knowledge, you won't know what to do. And therefore, you won't have the experience that shastra is true. But when you follow it, and you apply it, and you experience it, and you hear from it, your faith increases. Chudamani, what if I don't accept the authority of Srimad Bhagavatam? Vaishnavdat, this is the inclusion of all shastras. He says, not just Bhagavatam. If you don't accept the Bhagavatam, you'd be troubled by other shastras also. There's no need to me to quote many different shastras. Nana shastra vichara naika nipano sandharma samstapako. They scrutinized all shastras. They have other verses. You always read other references. So he's saying there's no need for me to do that. If you don't accept this conclusion of Bhagavatam, you won't accept the you'll be troubled by other shastras also. You may simply consider what it is said in Gita, which is accepted by the adherents of all philosophical systems. In fact, all instructions are present in the Gita Sloka that you uttered when you first arrived here. Api chet siddharacharo bhajate mam ananya bhak. Sadureva samantavya samyag babastito isa. When one has no object of devotion other than me, and his faith is just exclusively fixed in me, he remains absorbed in worshiping me by hearing Harikatha and chanting Harinam. Such a person has adopted the path of sadhus and should therefore consider a sadhu even if he behaves in opposition to the path of karma due to an abominable and depraved nature. So here's the thing again, bad nature of worshiping God. And he should be considered. The purport is, now this is interesting, is that the system of anashram that belongs to karmakanda is one type of path. The process of knowledge or renunciation that belongs to jnanakanda is a second type of path. And faith in Harikatha and Harinam that develops in satsang is a third type of path. So what he's saying is your principles that you condemn a person by a particular type of birth is based on vanashram in a particular way, but not based on vanashram according to the bhakti path. And according to the path one's in, the vanas and ashrams may be determined in different ways. Sometimes these three paths are taken together in a single yoga system, either identified as karma yoga, jnana yoga, or bhakti yoga, and sometimes they are practiced as separate. In other words, you may be a karma yoga, jnana yoga, bhakti yoga, but if they're the one path, the goal of everything will be bhakti yoga. And therefore, your karma yoga, the activities you do will also be called bhakti yoga. In the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada sometimes says karma yoga, and sometimes he translates it as bhakti yoga. If he understands, if you take it as one path, which the goal of which is to awaken your loving relationship to God, then when you're doing the path of action and concentrating on your responsibility and your charity, you're doing that for the objective to reach God. And if you're doing jnana yoga, and you're analyzing things, it's only to become detached of the non-essentials so that they won't plague you when you focus on God. This is so fascinating. He said the practice of these different systems are known as karma yogis, jnana yogis, and bhakti yogis. So they can be practiced separately. And then one becomes fixed on a particular level. Among all of these, the bhakti yogas are the best because bhakti is endowed with unlimited auspiciousness and is unparalleled in its supremacy. This is the conclusion in the Bhagavad Gita. Yoginam api sarvesham magyate natratmana shradhavam bhajate. Of all yogis, I consider the topmost to be the one who is constantly worshiping with great faith, with his mind deeply absorbed in loving attachment to me. The Gita 9.31.32 further explains, Shipram bhavati dharmatma shashvat shantim nagachati konti apatijana hi nameva. It is essential you clearly understand the purport of this verse. Shipram bhavati dharma. Faithful persons who have adopted the path of exclusive devotion are quickly purified of all faults in their nature and behavior. So that's the verse after. Even a person that he should be considered a sadhu. Why? Because such a person who's adopted the path of exclusive devotion will quickly be purified in their nature and behavior. Dharma surely follows wherever there is bhakti, because Bhagavan is the root of all dharma, and he's easily conquered by bhakti. I'm going to stop here. Are there any questions? Would anybody like to say hello?
Hi, Krishna Maharaj. Gail here.
Hi, Gail. Thank you, Gail.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
You're making the distinction between intellectual faith and, you know, that spontaneous faith in the heart.
Yeah.
I guess what would you say is the best way to cultivate the kind of faith that comes from the heart? Is it the hearing and chanting that, you know?
Yeah, well, hearing and chanting, because that's devotional service. Hearing and chanting as a devotional activity, and also hearing the teachings of the Shastra and applying them. And then you realize them. So it's hearing with a motive not to become a scholar, but hearing with the motive to be transformed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Gail.
Thank you.
Anybody else like to say hello?
Hari Bol Maharaj, Malati.
Malati, Hare Krishna. Thank you so much for being here. I almost forgot to give the class. I'm traveling, and I got back here, and then I opened up my computer, and I saw a message from someone who said, "You missed my call." And then I was supposed to be at 7. Oh, my God. Let me see what time it is. And it was a few minutes after 8. Okay. 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 Thank you. Okay, Hare Krishna. Anybody else like to say hello? Okay, let me end for today. Let's go.